silent and listen share the identical letters. If you take one thing out of today is just to become comfortable with silence. Silence will do the heavy lifting for you. In that moment, in that pause, they can gather their next thought or they can revisit what they just said and clarify it. In the West, in Western English-speaking workplaces, we have this weird relationship with silence. We call it the awkward silence, the pregnant pause, the deafening silence. They're all negative connotations to pause. In Eastern societies, in high-context society, Korea, Japan, China, silence is seen as a sign of wisdom, respect, and authority. Now, that's not to say they don't interrupt. But in group settings, it's not uncommon in Japan, for example, for a leader to pause and contemplate something for as long as 5 minutes before they respond.
Welcome to CEO on the Go, the show about personal and professional growth for busy leaders like you. I'm Gail Lance, and I'm here to help you think differently, solve big problems, and inspire change. It's tough to do on your own and even with a team, but it is possible. So let's get started. Welcome back to another episode. I have the perfect guest to follow my previous episode. In case you missed it, it was called Staying Cool Under Fire, Leadership in the Face of Conflict. In that one, I shared some of my own insights on how to navigate tension or conflict when you experience that. And it's just so common for leaders. So be sure to check that one out in case you missed it. And listen carefully to today's episode because it's all about deep listening. I had the pleasure of speaking and listening with Oscar Trimboli. He's based in Australia. Oscar's on a mission to create 100 million deep listeners. He's author of How to Listen and host of the Apple Award-winning podcast, Deep Listening. He's also a sought-after keynote speaker. Oscar's passionate about using the gift of listening to bring positive change in homes, workplaces, and cultures worldwide. He's interviewed over 100 of the most diverse workplace listeners, including air traffic controllers, deaf and foreign language interpreters, hostage negotiators, and spies as part of researching world-class listeners. Over 14,000 people have contributed to his research about what gets in their way when it comes to listening. Oscar is a marketing and technology industry veteran who's worked for companies like Microsoft and PeopleSoft, among others. I encourage you to learn more about his work and the resources that he offers at oscartrimboli.com and pick up a copy of his book, How to Listen. We're including links in the show notes. You know, it's really rare to come across someone you know who is truly listening. And when that happens, I always think of it as such a gift. Think about the people in your life who you consider to be good listeners. What I really appreciate is the way in which Oscar models what he teaches. After we ended the recording, Oscar asked me my own takeaways from the conversation. And I told him I liked the distinctions that he made as it relates to listening and the opportunity to be more discerning or intentional about how you phrase questions and how you use language and silence in conversations. He gave specific examples on how to do that. And I know you'll walk away with many of your own takeaways, so I can't wait for you to listen. He also asked how I would summarize our conversation in one sentence. And so I said, the conversation brings to light the importance of a listening mindset that's often overlooked or misunderstood or just taken for granted because we think we know how to listen. So it challenges leaders' assumptions about what good listening truly is. I think you'll be challenged and inspired to be a deep listening leader. Enjoy my conversation with Oscar Trimboli. Oscar, welcome to CEO on the Go podcast.
G'day, Gail. Really looking forward to listening to your questions today.
Well, I was so happy to stumble on your work that I was not familiar with. And like I told you from the beginning, I was just interested in the topic of deep listening and wanted to bring you on to share some insights with my audience. So I was just curious to know kind of what brought you to this topic. And I know you shared a story before we officially aired. So why don't you start there just to help us become more familiar with why you care about it so much?
Yeah, I think we need to zoom into April 2008. I'm in the annual budget setting meeting for Microsoft Australia. I'm a marketing director at the time there. And there's 18 people present, and some are virtual via video conference in Sydney, Seattle, and Singapore. And like any meeting of this scope and scale, there's a set piece that's very staged, some elements of it. And there's people sitting behind you with laptops furiously coding updates to what the implication of that change is for the budget. Yet 20 minutes in, my vice president sitting straight across the table from me, Tracy, says, "Oscar, we need to speak immediately after the meeting. Please stay behind." My heart sank. And the only thing going through my head was, I'm getting fired. How many weeks of salary have I got left? And who are the five people I need to call? Ironically, I didn't listen to the rest of the meeting. It finished about 20 minutes early. And as everybody filed out, Tracy asked me to close the door because what she had to say was really important. And as I walked back to the desk and the boardroom table, and she said to me something that was a profound moment of listening on her part. She said, "Oscar, if you could code how you listen, you could change the world." Now, Gail, in that moment, what I heard was, "Woohoo, I haven't been fired." And I think for a lot of leaders, thinking about how you communicate the message and what it means to your audience, there can be a disconnect. And if you have a listening mindset, you can check in. You can check in one-on-one conversations, group conversation, even at scale when you do employee and customer satisfaction surveys. Ironically, because I didn't listen, I had a huge number in my growth portfolio. And all I was from the next couple of weeks just obsessed with how do I figure out how to bridge the gap on the number from where I was. And my chief financial officer, Brian, said to me, "Oscar, can you come to our next team meeting? Because I want you to audit my listening." And I said, "Oh, Brian, have you been talking to Tracy about this listening malarkey?" And he said, yeah, it's really important. I said, "Brian, you know the number I've been given for the growth portfolio. I have to spend my time figuring out how to get there." And he said, "Look, Oscar, I can't fix your top line revenue budget." And then he said the magic words that anybody who's ever carried a quota loves to hear, "But we can invest for growth in your part of the business." And I said, "Brian, where is the meeting and what time is it?" And as I sat in Brian's meeting a few days later, I noticed he asked a lot of triple barrel questions, a lot of complex questions. He was only listening to a small subset of the 10 people in the room. Yeah, Gail, in that moment, what I realized as I looked at my scratch pad, my piece of paper, I was starting to code how to listen. And since then, I've been working with a deep listening ambassador community. We're on a quest to create 100 million deep listeners in the workplace. So that's where it all started from. And yeah.
Well, you're really a coder.
Well, the second, back to coding, my response to Tracy when I finally got one out is, "Tracy, do you mean code or code?" She goes, "Oscar, we work at Microsoft. I want you to code how to listen." It's like into software. And, you know, since that time, we've coded it into three books. We've coded it into jigsaw puzzle games. We've coded it into a listening assessment. And the technology now is at a point where it's cheap enough that you could provide real-time coaching to somebody while they are in a conversation. And this software exists in contact centers, and this software exists in sales automation software as well, where it, based on some very rudimentary prompts in the dialogue, that they can provide some feedback to the participant in there. Now, the downside of that, it also could distract them.
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating. I'd love to learn more about that. But you mentioned a listening mindset that you had, and I was curious to know more about what that is. How would you describe a listening mindset?
So when you think about listening, yes, it's a skill. Yes, it's a strategy, and it's also a mindset. And the mindset you need to be conscious of is simply this. I'll give you some nerdy maths about the brain. When somebody speaks, they speak at about 125 to 150 words per minute. Now, unless you're a cattle yard auctioneer or real estate auctioneer, you might speak at 200 words a minute. But on average, workplace conversations take place in a range of 125 to 150 words per minute. So I want you to think about the speaker and the speaker's brain. And the speaker's brain can think at up to 900 words per minute. Yet they can only say 125 per minute. That means that they can only say 14% of what they mean. The mindset we need to adopt is the first thing that somebody says may not be what they think or what they mean. And your mindset as a listener is that good managers listen to what's said. Great leaders notice what's not said. That big gap, that 86% of unsaid. The listening mindset is to go and notice, I've heard what they've said. I need to be more curious about what's missing, what they haven't said, and importantly, what they mean. Because when we get to what they mean, that's when they feel heard, seen, and valued, whether that's customers, regulators, government officials, staff, suppliers. When you truly feel valued, noticed, the relationship is stronger, and the kinds of outcomes you get move from transactional to transformational. Gail, as you hear, there's only 14% of what somebody says the very first time, and there's 86% that you need to spend some time going and listening for. What's that got you thinking?
That I need to apologize for anything that I say and go, wait, let me think about that again and come back tomorrow. It makes me pause to make sure that I'm either more careful about what I'm saying at first, or maybe even as a leader saying, here are some initial thoughts, and then...
Yeah, that's a lovely phrase. Here's my incomplete thoughts. Here are my unfinished thoughts. Here are my initial thoughts. And one of the techniques you can use as a leader, and most people think listening is about the moment and your presence, and that is true. And listening happens before, during, and after the conversation. And one of the things you can help people to get to that 86% of what they mean is to use a prompt before the conversation starts. If it's a one-on-one, I might send an email to Gail and say, hey, Gail, what is your focus for tomorrow? What is the outcome you want to achieve? Now, in most cases, people won't reply to that email, but what you have done is planted in the subconscious for that person. You'll start to get them thinking about that. Now, in the moment, if you ask them the identical question in the moment, you're going to get their draft thinking. Most people don't type an email and send it. Most people type an email, check it, edit it, and then send it. And those steps don't necessarily exist when someone's in dialogue as a speaker. You're going to get their top of mind thinking the very first time. You're not going to get their thoughts, what they think, and what matters to them, what it means. Yeah, if you can get to what it means as a CEO and a leader, you'll get discretionary effort from your staff. You'll get customers who will refer you to other customers, and they'll become a hidden unpaid sales force for you. So for your listening, remember, listening can happen before, during, and after. And if you think listening can't take place after a meeting, take an action from a meeting and don't do it. And people will say, wow, they didn't listen to me. So for a lot of us, because we don't have a mindset that's curious, open, and dancing with the tension of listening for both similarity, trying to confirm an understanding, and also difference. What else haven't they said? What else haven't we explored? What other possibilities exist? Is it possible that I could be wrong in my assumptions? And how can this people, the group, one-on-one, or others help me get there?
Yeah. So would you suggest specific questions or technique to help get at that with the people that you're engaged with?
as leaders, the shorter the question, the less biased it is. So I often say a really simple heuristic is 8 words or less is likely to be an unbiased question. 8 words or more is likely to be a biased question.
That's a good tip there.
Yet you can shorten that even further. What I want to point out, biased questions are not correct or incorrect. They have a place. Just most of us are not conscious that we're using biased questions more regularly than is going to be productive for the dialogue. So I want you to imagine a compass and a compass that points north, south, east, and west. There's three really simple phrases you can use to navigate around the compass. If you're listening for more and you want to listen for similarity, you can simply say more, tell me more. I'm curious, tell me more about that, Gail. That keeps the conversation going in the same direction and they expand at that point in time. It's easy to remember, tell me more. Don't say, tell me more like a robot, be a human about it. Wow, that's fascinating, Gail. Just tell me a little more about that or say more about that. So that's going to keep the conversation going in the same direction. If you want to move the conversation and start to listen for difference, we want to ask east-west questions. We're going to move about 90 degrees on the compass setting. And we want to ask a very simple version of this question. And what else? And what else haven't we considered? And what else would the regulator ask of us? And what else would the competition anticipate? And this is expanding both our perspectives to listen for difference. And if you're really stuck and you forget those two phrases, the third phrase is the shortest and it's the most potent and it's the one most people don't use. So listen carefully. Here it is.
Okay. I hear you.
So don't worry, nothing broke in the recording. Silent and listen share the identical letters. If you take one thing out of today is just to become comfortable with silence. Silence will do the heavy lifting for you. In that moment, in that pause, they can gather their next thought. Or they can revisit what they just said and clarify it. In the West, in Western English-speaking workplaces, we have this weird relationship with silence. We call it the awkward silence, the pregnant pause, the deafening silence. They're all negative connotations to pause. In Eastern societies, in high-context society, Korea, Japan, China, silence is seen as a sign of wisdom, respect, and authority. Now, that's not to say they don't interrupt. But in group settings, it's not uncommon in Japan, for example, for a leader to pause and contemplate something for as long as 5 minutes before they respond.
Yeah, that's different. Well, I would be remiss not to ask you a question or two that I know that my clients are asking. May I do that to see how you would respond?
Oh, lately, absolutely.
I've been working with some senior executives who had some stressful moments in conversations that have been tense or there could be some disagreements or even conflict where it's hard for them to listen because perhaps they feel criticized or that they're not understood in the right way. And the tendency is to want to respond quickly or defend themselves. So what do you suggest?
I've been that executive. Guilty.
So what do you suggest? There are different degrees of this, you know, that happen, you know, ranging from mild disagreement to sometimes you just have to just stop the conversation. So what advice would you have for people who find themselves in those kind of awkward, stressful conversations where it's hard to listen?
I'll break it up before, during, and after. So in those ambiguous context that you just described, one of the things you want to become conscious of, and the reason I say ambiguous context is that's how we operate at executive level. There's nothing that's always clear. There's always a film of fog in the conversation and we have imperfect information and yet we're implored, cajoled into decision-making rather than getting the group to come to the decision itself. So it's goes with the territory, and it's the privilege of leadership. So the first thing I want to invite you to think about is to think about your listening battery. Before you go into these kinds of conversations, visualize your listening battery. Is it green? Is it orange? Is it red or is it about to touch on black? You have a finite capacity for listening. Listening takes place in the prefrontal cortex, the most modern part of the brain, and it utilizes working memory when it's in dialogue with another human or a group of other humans. So there is a finite capacity for your listening. And most people need to make a judgment call first and foremost. Is now the right time for this conversation? And you need to be choiceful about that, but you also need to be explicit in the way you discuss that with another person. So they might bump into you in between a meeting and, Gail, it's really important. I need to tell you something right now about the broken project over in manufacturing plant 3. And you have a choice at that point, Gail. If your listening battery is green, you may choose to engage. Yet if your listening battery is red or hitting black, you may just want to go, look, that's really important. Right now, I'm just about to head to another meeting. I've made a note of that. Can we connect on that tomorrow? So you have to signal that you've heard them, but you need to talk to them at a time when your listening battery is ready to accept whatever the dialogue is that's going to take place. So tip number one, notice your listening battery. And if you're going to engage in dialogue where your listening battery is drained, you're going to get a really suboptimal outcome for you and for them. And worst of all, you probably need to book another meeting to have another conversation to fix that conversation. And your time is already jammed into your calendar. So think of it as a way to optimize your calendar rather than pushing a meeting out of your calendar. During the meeting, it is critical that your orientation as a leader adopts a position that most people aren't conscious of. So again, if we imagine a dialogue between two parties, it could be two groups or two individuals. Most people think party A and party B are participating in the conversation. When you have a listening mindset, you're actually listening for the third participant that's always present in these conversations. And this is the outcome. What is the outcome we are trying to achieve? And this will give you a way to detach yourself from the situation. And rather than you thinking you're being attacked, you need to orientate yourself and go, are we listening for the outcome or are we debating personalities? Because if we're debating personalities, we're in a transactional system that's likely to be churning, rather than a system that's getting step changes and performing in a really potent way. So tip number two is ask this question, what would make this a good conversation to the parties you're engaged with? Now, here's a very important point, Gail. Do not say, what would make this a good conversation for you? Because they'll be really selfish and they won't consider the shared outcome. The linkage between us is the outcome. What will make this a good conversation? They'll say, this would make it a good conversation. If they don't ask you back, you say, from my perspective, that's a great outcome too. And you use that as a checkpoint during the conversation, both for if you feel you're attacked, well, are they attacking me because it's part of the outcome? No. Okay, let's reorientate ourselves. And the way we want to reorientate ourselves is every 10 to 15 minutes, you want to check in. Gail, at the beginning of the conversation, you said X would make this a good outcome, a good conversation. How are we tracking? Or you may say, I sense we're off track. And they'll self-correct at that point. And they go, yeah, you're right. We're a little off track. Okay, how should we use the balance of our time? And I think by using that as a point of gravity, a navigation point, the North Star in the compass that we mentioned earlier on, all of a sudden, we don't feel threatened. Our needy ego isn't necessarily feeling challenged all the time. And our ego is super important. Everybody thinks ego is bad, but ego plays a role to protect and it also plays a role to expand. It's when the ego gets selfish there. So thinking about that.
Just did another podcast on that. Sorry to interrupt, but I thought I would throw that in.
Yeah, go ahead. What happened on that podcast?
Well, it's yet to air. So, but it will probably air before this one. Yeah. And it's just talking about checking your ego, the need for leaders to check their ego. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I sense it's not check it at the door. It's just notice it, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And is it being productive in the moment? So we've got two tips, you know, notice your listening battery. And number two, how do you detach everybody in the meeting from the emotion and the personal attacks? And how do you get them to the outcome? Which one of those two do you think might be more useful for the clients you work with, Gar?
I think going back to the outcome is something that is useful. It's so hard to do when you feel like you are being personally challenged in some ways, but it helps reorient the focus to where it truly needs to be. It's something I encourage my clients to do a lot. So I'm really pleased to hear you emphasizing the importance of that. And part of the challenge can be if there's not even agreement on the outcome. So that's something that I check for. Is there disagreement about the outcome that we're trying to achieve? Or is it the how? Or is it the who? Or the way we're going about communicating this? So,
yeah. And what you just explained was a wonderful listening mindset about how do I discover the unsaid? So it's not necessarily what they say the first time. They might say, oh, this is a good outcome for the meeting. And you can practice those phrases. Is there anything else? Or tell me more about that. And they'll expand. And if you have that listening mindset, you'll start to get to what's unsaid, because often what they say the first time isn't necessarily what they mean.
Right. What would you tell a leader that says, well, I think my people are the problem, that they don't listen well? I've been very clear and I've been telling them, you know, whatever they need to know. But sometimes leaders sense that it's the team that has the problem.
And it's back to that listening mindset. What techniques are you using to confirm what they heard? Remember back to Tracy and Oscar in a budget setting meeting in a boardroom. Tracy says, I need to see you immediately after this meeting. Oscar hears, I'm getting fired. We need to, as executives and leaders, we need to check regularly with what they've heard. So again, this plays out in groups settings. You should check. And the way I check with the clients I work with is a really simple statement. So if I'm working with the engineering division, I would say to them, great, how would you summarize this for the head of finance? So their expression of what they heard has to move from an orientation other than themselves. And when they say what they say, you can go, oh, is that what they heard? Great. Ooh, is that what they heard? Oh, I better elaborate on point three, because I think I didn't communicate it as effectively. So back to the leader that says it's not me that's not listening, it's them that's not listening. Communication is a simultaneous equation between the speaker and the listener. If you're not checking for their meaning, you are likely to walk out as confused as they are. Because many leaders communicate in a way that's, if you think about this concept of a menu, a recipe and ingredients, a lot of leaders are communicating ingredients and occasionally the recipe. They don't spend much time on the menu. Gail, if I said to you, I'm chopping up onions, I've got some salt and pepper, I've got some mincemeat, I've got garlic and olive oil, what am I making?
I don't know. I'm a terrible cook. Maybe mincemeat?
Yeah, it could be mincemeat. It could be spaghetti. It could be tacos. It could be any range of meal. When you're communicating or down at the ingredient level, which a lot of leaders do, people hear and make their own meaning of it based on their context. And you just did a beautiful job of that. I'm not a good cook. Is it mincemeat, right? But yeah. Somebody else in the room, based on their cultural background, could be thinking tacos.
Yeah, true.
Now, every Sunday, our family gets together and I cook my nonna's pasta al forno or lasagna. And if you came into the home at about 11 o'clock, in the morning, you would smell these beautiful smells coming out of the kitchen and on the tables, beautiful tablecloths with some wine and some bread. And I've described exactly the same thing. But Gail, can I check, when I described the ingredients, was your mouth salivating?
Or yes, when I'm coming to visit. Yeah.
Right.
That sounds great.
When you start with a story and finish with the data, this is an order a lot of leaders forget. story first, data second, if you don't know your audience, then everyone can contextualize it for them. So as a leader, if you want to make sure people hear you, stop communicating the ingredients and show them the menu first, then show them the recipe, and then finally the ingredients. Most leaders invert that, and you get the situation where teams don't listen.
Okay, that's a great metaphor. I know we're getting toward the end of our time, but I was hoping you might be able to touch on the cost of not listening in the workplace, because I know you've done a lot of research and can speak to that. And because the people who are listening to this episode probably buy into the idea of listening, but maybe they want to try to help promote this idea to others. And it would be helpful to know, what is this really costing organizations?
Organizations that listen well grow faster than their competition. They perform from a market share perspective, a profitability perspective, employee retention and customer satisfaction perspective. They overperform compared to their peer groups. When you think about every customer that you may have lost, that's a result of not listening. When you think about great employees that leave before you want them to or they want to, they leave because they don't feel they're being heard by a manager. Every disaster that exists, whether it's the Deepwater Horizon off the coast of Louisiana or the global pandemic, is all a consequence of a lack of listening by leaders. When you think you're struggling with suppliers who aren't delivering what you expected of them, again, this is the presence of a lack of listening. So whether it's profitability, whether it's revenue growth, whether it's great employees, there's an impact for lack of listening. And here's a way you can provide a really simple diagnosis for yourself in your own organization. If you undertake regular employee engagement surveys, my question to you is, if I asked you to stop surveying your staff right now until you implemented everything they asked you in the last survey, could your hand on heart say, yeah, I've listened and done everything they've asked for in the past? Or do you have to pause and go, this is a good example of listening after the fact? Because the cost of not listening in that case is employees that are not going to provide discretionary effort, employees who are going to go through the motions because they know no matter what button they click on your survey, nothing much is going to change because it hasn't. They hadn't implemented what we asked the last time. So please, if you want to do a quick diagnosis again with your customer survey, how well have you gone implementing what they've asked you in the major themes? And if I ask you to pause and go back and build an implementation plan for that, could your hand on heart say, we've done it all, or is there some work to do there as well? And the cost of not listening sometimes is your action, and in most cases, it's your inaction that results in higher costs and fewer customers.
Very good. Well, do you happen to have a final tip or words of encouragement for people who want to get better at this? We've covered some ground today, and there's so much more to learn, but I always love to ask if there's just one final tip or takeaway that you'd like to offer.
I'll just reinforce one I made earlier on. Silent and listen. Share the same letters. If you're stuck in any conversation, just pause for 3 seconds. You'd be surprised what they say and what you hear.
Fantastic. Well, Oscar, I can't thank you enough for shedding some light on this topic that we haven't done a deep dive on. So now is the time. And again, appreciate your speaking and listening with me during our time together today.
Thanks for listening, Gal.
And for everyone else listening in, I hope you have a great rest of the week doing more deep listening while you do the work that matters to you. Thanks for tuning in. And as always, be sure to share this episode with someone else who might benefit or leave a review. You can join my email list by going to workmatters.com so you don't miss an episode. And there you can learn more about ways we serve mission-driven leaders like you. If there's a challenge you want to discuss, I'd love to hear from you. In the meantime, keep growing as a leader, inspiring change, and doing the work that matters to you.